Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Cup champion Florida Panthers, the five-time national championship winner Miami Hurricanes, Miami Hurricanes basketball, and Supporter Shield winners Inter Miami.
Powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys.
Call 1-800-747-3.
That's 1-800-747-3733.
This show's a daily contest to see who's dumber.
You ain't got no class like me, man. I'm an aristocrat.
We apologize. This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
They're not like us. They're not like us. They're not like us.
This isn't the Oprah Winfrey Show. My feelings don't matter.
Mark Hockman.
I have this fantasy of becoming obese and bedridden and having people bring me food.
What's your favorite pasta? The gabagool?
Channing Crowder.
I just got an insufficient funds text. I might not be able to buy no beer tonight. I lost my virginity watching Bill dance.
Google me, bro.
Alejandro Solana.
So Billy the Marlin isn't a bird? I'm basically a professional kayaker.
Sports.
I used to hang out with Chris Volstead.
Okay.
I would just like to confirm I am wearing underwear today.
You know what else is great all the time, doesn't matter what the scenario? Bagpipes.
Finish your damn string cheese.
Jimmy Jewelry.
More sports.
Come on, repeat after me.
Here comes the Blackfoot.
The most sports.
Jimmy, you've never had an injury?
No, I stretched.
The Hockman and Crowder extravaganza begins now.
Hawk and Crowder Show, New Year's Eve. Josh Appel in for Hawk and Crowder today. Solana as well. Steven Gonzalez back in the studio for us. You might notice a theme for today's show. Flying high today. Well, Sunday night after the Bucks-Panthers game from Tampa to Fort Lauderdale. Very glad I could provide such incredible content to Hawk yesterday. An entire hour on my travel habits. And don't you worry. I have prepared a full rebuttal for the outlandish criticism I received on this program yesterday. But let's set up the show first, because we got a lot to talk about. We got two bowl games going on right now. Everybody's favorite snub of the postseason in college football, Alabama, got off to maybe the worst start I've ever seen in a bowl game in the ReliaQuest Bowl against 6-6 Michigan. We've got the Cheez-It Bowl starting at 3 o'clock. We've got the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl starting right now between Washington and Louisville. Later on this hour, we'll be joined by Noah Eagle, voice of Big Ten Saturday Night on NBC, voice of Big Ten Basketball on Peacock, works for the Suns and the Nets on Yes Network as well. You also saw him on Christmas Day on Netflix, so we'll talk about a bunch of stuff with Noah. Adam Beasley, Pro Football Network, will join us in the 3 o'clock hour, and we'll talk some Dolphins with him as well. But here's where we need to start, because Hawk loves to do this thing where he roasts me and criticizes me without me on the show, so I'm not able to give my rebuttal in real time. Interesting how when it doesn't suit him, he doesn't like that method of history, of covering history. Crazy. But anyways. So first off, let's start from the beginning, okay? The reason I flew from Fort Lauderdale to Tampa and back this past weekend, okay? Something I've done at least a dozen times. And I would say until this past experience on Sunday night coming back, I've never had any issues whatsoever. Okay? So originally, our crew was scheduled to go to Cleveland for Dolphins-Browns this past Sunday. That was going to be our 4 o'clock game, and the 1 o'clock game was originally Packers-Vikings. Well, we're not going to give that game up, so once Packers-Vikings got moved to 425, obviously we can't have 2 4 o'clock games at the same time. So our crew got switched to the game in Tampa. I booked my flights through United. United, I guess, has some kind of partnership with Silver Airways. And so I just used my flight credit on Silver Airways. And now before I get to the rest of this, I would just like to say, Hawk and Mike Cuno and Solana were ripping me for being so dug in on how this was just an appalling decision not to drive. The decision to fly is not a bad decision. The decision to fly is the right one. What I will concede is the decision to fly Silver Airways instead of Southwest was the incorrect decision and where I messed up royally in this whole process. That's my regret, not that I chose to fly. So that's how we ended up on a bird going from Fort Lauderdale to Tampa and back. Now, this is not my first experience with Silver Airways, who, by the way, I saw Hawk sent about 17 different tweets to Cuno and I this morning about how Silver Airways filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, I think today. I did my best to try and keep them in business. It did not work, clearly. So I went back and I listened to the 3 o'clock hour from yesterday, and I took some notes, bullet point by bullet point. And at the beginning, they were just explaining, you know, why I was in Tampa, which game I was calling. And Solana mentioned my call of the block punt with the duck on the field was excellent. And you know what? In honor of finding some common ground with people I disagree with, I agree with Solana. My call of that was excellent.
It was great. I saw it on X that you posted it. That was a great call.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. Maybe we'll play it later. But I found it so convenient that nobody over the course of this entire conversation mentioned how seamless my travel was initially going from Fort Lauderdale to Tampa. Okay? I had a 3 o'clock flight that landed at, a 3:30 flight that landed at 4:15 in Tampa. And we were on time and everything. I was in my hotel right around 5 o'clock on Saturday. I don't know why that gets conveniently left out, right? Because, oh, it's only 3.5 hours if you drive. You don't have to worry about the hassle, the this, the that. Hawk said, well, when you get to Fort Lauderdale, by the time you drive there, by the time you park, by the time you wait at the gate, hey, guys, I'm a professional traveler here, all right? It's what I do. I have clear. I have TSA pre-check. You think that for a 3:30 flight or leaving here, I'm going to show up to the airport an hour and a half, 2 hours before my flight? No. I boarded at 3 o'clock. You know what time I showed up to the airport on Saturday afternoon to board at 3? 2:30. 2:30. I walk through security, breeze right through, go right onto Silver Airways. We board the flight. The flight takes off our Wright Brothers-powered propeller plane. We get to Tampa on time without a hitch. It was wonderful. Hawk and Cuno didn't have anything to say then. Not a word. So, fast forward. End of the game on Sunday. We get to the car probably around 5. Because, you know, I like to wait for my producer to finish packing up all of our stuff, our engineer. Wait for all the traffic to die down. So we get out of the stadium about 45 minutes to an hour after the game ends. Get in the car, 5 o'clock, get to the airport, 5:10. My flight is scheduled to leave Tampa at 7 o'clock and get to Fort Lauderdale at 8:15. And I'm a 6:30 board, be an hour and a half in the airport. I grabbed something to eat prior and enjoyed some payway. I will say, the picture I tweeted of Ducky's, the restaurant, in honor of the duck incident in the Bucks game, it was only for the content. I didn't eat at Ducky's. I chose Payway instead. So I rushed through, eating my payway. 6:15 comes. All right, fine. So I go over to the gate. Everything still says on time. And then sure enough, 10 minutes later, okay, we're delayed. Don't know how long. There's a guy at the gate. The gate agent is probably 23 years old. We get to the end, towards the end of the delay, and we've got people cursing him out, and they're asking for a manager. And he's like, well, we don't have a manager. Silver Airways, everybody. So you know what? I wasn't too upset because, as they mentioned on the show yesterday, if I had gotten to the flight on time, there's no Wi-Fi on Silver Airways. So I wouldn't have been able to watch the end of the Dolphins game and have my fiery hot takes today. The delay was actually playing in my favor when it comes to that. But regardless, their argument was that if I left Raymond James Stadium at 5 o'clock, I could drive home and be home at or before 9 o'clock. And my argument back to them was that if my flight was on time, I'd have been home before I would have gotten home if I drove. All of this is hogwash. For the record, we didn't take off until 9:30. We sat on the runway for 45 minutes, and I landed at 10:40, for the record. And I won't acknowledge I was wrong.
Everything was sounding so good until you mentioned that you got home past 10 o'clock.
It's okay. But again, I'm not going to acknowledge I was wrong, because I wasn't wrong. The method of travel was not the wrong decision. It was the airline I chose to fly. And this Cuneo rule, oh, if you can get anywhere with less than a tank of gas, don't go to the airport. There's no pleasant experiences at the airport. Excuse me? I love an airport. You go to a lounge, you go to a restaurant, you enjoy an airport beer. Who doesn't love an airport beer?
Yeah, once you pass Everyone TSA, the airport experience is an enjoyable one. The TSA part, not so much.
If you're a prepared traveler and you go through TSA pre-check or you have clear, it is a breeze. And the less time that I spend at the airport because of that is great. But if I have to spend some time, I'll pull up at the bar at Payway. I'll go over to Ducky's. I'll go grab a meal. I'll go in one of the lounges. There's no enjoyable experiences in an airport. Give me a break.
I don't know why, but I feel like for some reason I'm always that random traveler that gets searched, no matter how prepared I am. I am always getting pulled aside for some reason. I don't know if I just got a look to me. I have no idea what it is.
That sounds like a you problem. By the way, Cuneo was taking shots left and right at the Wright brothers. I'm a big Wright brothers guy. And I'm glad I made Cuneo angry. Oh, yeah, Josh could have been home eating ice cream, blah, 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 blah. Again. I stayed there. I enjoyed some payway. I watched the end of the Dolphins game. Got some candy. It was great. And of course I dug my heels in. I was right. I was absolutely right. And this idea that, oh, it's purely a flex from Josh Appel because the company pays for the travel. Well, who's flexing about flying Silver Airways? Who? I wasn't flexing. There's nothing to flex over. And then to follow that up from Solana with, oh, when I traveled back and forth from Tampa, I could have flown with the team, but I decided not to. You're going to accuse me of flexing and then drop that in the next line? Please. Again, I've flown to and from Tampa at least a dozen times. One time on Silver. And this is the first issue I've ever had. Hawk. Cuneo. Solana, get out of here. Wrong. We'll get Noah Eagle and Anna Beasley's thoughts on this fiasco that's dividing America when they join the show. Noah in the next segment, Adam Beasley in the 3 o'clock hour. We'll have more on this throughout the day because you could tell I'm a bit fired up over this. I've also got something for Igor Shesterkin later in the show as well, the New York Rangers goaltender. Panthers had a big win. I'm sure we'll hear about it. And these very quick headlines from Steven Gonzalez here in the 2 o'clock hour.
Headlines brought to you by Doral Kia. At Doral Kia, choose from over 500 new Kia models in inventory like the Sportage, Sorento, and Telluride. Remember, when it comes to Kia, the great deals are at Doral Kia. Monday Night Football last night, the Lions take the win over the 49ers 40-34 in what was a meaningless game that ended up being one of the most fun games of the year. Dolphins will take on the Jets on Sunday, 4:25 p.m., with playoff hopes still alive in Week 18 after the last week's win against the Browns in Cleveland. Tua's availability still up in the air with the hip injury, up to medical professionals to clear him to play. If he can't go, it will be backup quarterback Tyler Snoop Huntley once again. Dolphins also need some help from the Chiefs if they can take down the Broncos. The Dolphins will make the playoffs with a win against the Jets and a Broncos loss. Hurricanes head coach Mario Cristobal announced this morning that defensive coordinator Lance Guidry has been fired and will not return with the program for next season. There's five bowl games going on. First one, Alabama is currently playing against Michigan. That score is 16-10. Michigan is leading at the moment. Most important game of the day, though, Penn State-Boise State in the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, 7:30 p.m. That is the first of the college football playoff quarterfinal games. The Heat, last game against the Rockets, did not disappoint. They came out on top 104-100 in what became more of a WWE match late in the game.
Love a brawl. Love a brawl.
Yeah, that's kind of what the Heat need to get going. Usually this happens once a year where a little brawl will ignite the flame.
Tyler Hero right in the middle of it.
Yep. The Heat, they play tomorrow, New Year's Day, where they take on the New Orleans Pelicans on home floor from the Kaseya Center. Tip off 7:30 p.m. Catch all the action tomorrow, starting with preheat at 6:15 p.m. right here on 560 WQAM. And the Panthers took care of business last night on home ice against the Rangers, 5-3 win, currently in first place in the Atlantic Division with 48 points through 38 games. Their next game is on Thursday against the Carolina Hurricanes from the Amerant Bank Arena. Now time for your weather, sponsored by DeMesmin and Dover Law Firm, youraccidentattorneys.com. Free consultations 24-7 at 866-954-MORE. Weather outside, 81 degrees, got 6-mile-an-hour winds, 68% humidity, little chance of rain later on in the day, but for right now it seems like everything is just fine.
Awesome. So we've got Noah Eagle, voice of Big Ten Saturday night on NBC, voice of Big Ten basketball on Peacock, one of the voices of the Brooklyn Nets on YES. And of course, you just saw him last week doing play-by-play for Texans and Ravens on the Christmas Day NFL special on Netflix. Noah Eagle will join us next on Hockman and Crowder.
You're listening to the Hawk and Crowder Show.
Don't go anywhere. We will continue talking about things we don't know anything about.
Hawk and Crowder.
Welcome back to Hawk and Crowder. Josh Appel in for Hawk Crowder. Solana, no Jimmy today either. So Steven's with us once again today. Happy to be joined now by my good friend, Noah Eagle, voice of Big Ten Saturday night on NBC, as well as Big Ten basketball on Peacock and the Nets on YES. You also just watched him a week ago on Netflix, calling the second game on Netflix's Christmas NFL special. He joins us on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan, toyotaofhollywood.com. Noah, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, that was a flawless read-through all the way through the hotline. That was impressive.
Listen, I'm no Noah Eagle, but listen, I can strive to be. Let's start here with the issue that is dividing America in these polarizing times. And before I ask you this question and before you answer this question, just know that I've conceded that the wrong decision that I made throughout this whole process is the airline I chose, not the method of travel. So with that being said, how do you feel about my decision to fly to Tampa and back from Fort Lauderdale instead of making the 3.5-4 hour drive?
Yeah, so I guess the next question is, what airline did you choose exactly?
You ever heard of Silver Airways?
Nope. That's definitely your problem. Yeah, if you're going to do it, it's got to be reputable. I think otherwise, what's wrong with a nice road trip, man? Just get in the car. You could call some people you haven't caught up with in a while. You could get some tunes going. You could listen to podcasts about the teams you're about to cover. I mean, you could solve world hunger in 3.5 hours if you really put your mind to it. But instead, you decided to go through security, maybe use your clear, which I can respect. You've got it. Mm-hmm. So you might as well flaunt it. and really get some extra miles. I mean, how many miles does that actually equate to in your account on, what'd you say it was, Silver Lake Airlines?
Silver Airways, but the great thing about Silver, just listen to that phrase for a second.
Nobody said that ever.
Nobody. The great thing about Silver is that I can like set up my United points through that, because I think they're a partner, I guess. I don't know. So it would go towards United, which I don't have very many points on to begin with. But again, I'm willing to concede that I should not have chosen Silver Airways when Southwest was an option. So I'm willing to concede that. And I would also say that you underestimate how I could solve world hunger in an hour and 15 minutes on a plane versus driving in a car, because I got to be focused on the road. It's all safety, you know? I can listen to those podcasts. I can do whatever on a flight. Now, not this one in particular because there's no Wi-Fi, but that's besides the point.
Are you saying you're such a poor driver that you have to be laser focused on the road through an entire 3.5 hour drive?
No, I was just coming up with an excuse.
Respect. I respect your willingness to stay on the stake. And to be fair, I have flown to or from Syracuse from New Jersey, which is about the same distance. So I can't even completely hate.
Thank you. Because you agree with me and you're on my side. And you think it was the right decision to fly.
No, every dog needs a bone once in their life.
I'm taking this as a win for me, because I'm getting a text. I'm getting a text from Hawk right now that you're on their side, and I don't think that's what I just heard.
I don't like to choose sides. I'm a pacifist by nature, so I'm on no side. I'm on the side of making fun of whoever is being ridiculous, which for the majority of this is you, specifically for Silver Airlines.
All right, well, Noah, thanks for taking the time to join us. Appreciate you. Well, I'm going to make you pick sides here, because let's shift our attention over to the college football playoff. We've got the quarterfinals starting tonight. One of your Big Ten teams, Penn State against Boise State in the Fiesta Bowl. We've got Texas, Arizona State tomorrow. Another game you called earlier this year, Ohio State, Oregon. We'll get to that matchup later. Notre Dame, Georgia tomorrow as well. Before we talk about the actual games, what do you make of all the noise surrounding the first round of the playoff, mainly surrounding Indiana? To me, it I don't want to say devalued the playoff, but it undercut everything that we like about playoffs in general in any sport. So what did you make of that whole narrative, that whole conversation? Because I was rather annoyed by it.
Yeah, I think that it was blown out of proportion in a lot of respects. I saw Indiana early in the season. It was a really impressive program, and Kurt Cignetti is a really impressive coach. And I do think that I understood it, I think, maybe initially when that was the first game played and Indiana got behind quickly and Notre Dame really took it to them. You know, Indiana made it somewhat respectable in the final score, but it was never close. So I at least understood it when that was the only game to look at. But then when every other team goes on the road, including Tennessee, who was considered the third best SEC team, going up against a team that finished fourth in the Big Ten and gets absolutely slaughtered by a wider margin than Indiana, that was down earlier in that game than Indiana ever was against Ohio State. Indiana went down, you know, going into the second half. It was a one-score game at halftime between those two teams. Indiana had a lead to start that game. They went down the field and scored. Tennessee didn't do that. Tennessee's the third best team in the SEC. So my problem was there was a lack of equity within this discussion. If you want to make the discussion that, hey, Indiana got blown out, maybe we need to reassess, that's one thing. But if you then are saying that, then why aren't we saying that about Tennessee? Why aren't we saying that about all the other teams that got absolutely housed? SMU got destroyed. It's just how it is. And I think what we learned from that first round more than anything is two things. One, that home field advantage is a big deal, especially for teams like SMU that aren't accustomed to playing cold weather all the time, although a little bit more in the ACC now, and Tennessee, who never plays in cold weather. To have to go to a cold weather city, hostile environment, and battle with some of the best in the country, it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do. And then the second thing I think we really learned this year, you know, this year all season we've been saying it's as wide open as it's ever been. And I still wholeheartedly believe that. But I do think there was a separation. You know, there's maybe seven and eight teams or somewhere in that range that truly can win a national championship. And we're closer to narrowing that gap to that group in this round. That doesn't change. Now, doesn't mean that in the future there won't be an upset, and that's what we're all hopeful for. It just wasn't meant to be this year. So I think the idea that, well, the Big Ten, what's wrong with the Big Ten? No, no, no. There's nothing wrong with the Big Ten, nothing wrong with the ACC, nothing wrong with the Big 12. This is just how the team shook out this year, and the best teams found their way to the quarterfinals.
I'm glad you brought up Tennessee in that answer because I found it puzzling. You know, a lot of these talking heads that were railing against Indiana and SMU were strangely silent as Tennessee was getting their doors blown off by Ohio State, which to me kind of gives away the game here from those. And like the frustrating part was it was from these prominent figures in college football who should be celebrating the fact that Indiana had this remarkable season and even got to that point. And again, I just think it took so much away from it. And these are the prominent voices, other than yourself, of college football. It was really frustrating seeing all of that play out. And then the next layer to this is what's happening right now in Tampa Bay, which is Alabama getting off to one of the most horrendous starts in a bowl game I've ever seen against a 6-6 Michigan team. And Alabama was the team that everybody was saying was the one that got snubbed. So, again, it feels like it gives away the whole game with all these narratives and all these talking points from these prominent figures.
As far as I'm concerned, for a team like Alabama and Ole Miss or any of these teams that believe they should have gotten in, and Lane Kiffin tweeting all the time, if you wanted to get in, don't lose to a god-awful Oklahoma team this year by 3 touchdowns. Don't lose to Vanderbilt. Don't lose games that, quite frankly, Indiana didn't lose this year. I think that's the part that was really getting me is you can say strength of schedule and who did you beat. Alabama had some great wins, and Ole Miss had some great wins, and I get that. Miami, you can look through. But Indiana didn't have bad losses. Like, isn't that important, too, that you don't have bad losses, that you have week in and week out pretty consistent performance? That has to be valued. To win 11 of your 12 games has to be valued instead of going 9-3, but hey, we beat a couple good teams. But you also lost to some bad teams. That's the balance that I think we need to still reach. And it's never going to be an exact science. That's what makes this so interesting is every year, criteria is just going to be different. It's not like the NBA or NFL where your record tells you what you are and you get in based on that record. It's just not that way. And even the NCAA tournament, while it's not as egregious potentially in how many you're leaving off, and sure, you've got a couple of those teams, and I remember Syracuse a few years ago believing that they deserved to be in the NCAA tournament when I was a sophomore. They didn't get in, and people were upset, but they didn't deserve to be in. And they lost in the second round of the NIT because they didn't deserve to be in. To me, the teams that are most deserving when it's all said and done are going to be there at the end, and that's what's really going to matter because Alabama proved all year offensively, they had plenty of pieces, but defensively, there were some major issues, especially early this season, that they never quite fixed, and they just weren't quite good enough, in my opinion, to beat these teams. You mentioned it. Michigan had a brutal season, all things considered. They salvaged it a bit with the big win against Ohio State to finish the season, but they had no quarterback play. If they had just had average quarterback play, you could say Michigan would have had a 9 or 10 win season, and they would have been in that discussion, but they weren't, and yet here they are, with a lead going into the fourth quarter against Alabama, who everybody said should have found their way in. So, again, I think that when it's all said and done, the smoke clears, we're in a round now, and certainly when we get to the semifinals, the best teams are going to be the ones left.
And just one last point, and then we can move on. I'm glad that you also brought up most deserving, because that was one of the lines that was thrown out there during this whole discussion, where we got to get the best teams, not the most deserving teams. That is like the antithesis of everything that qualifying for any kind of postseason anywhere is. But enough about this. Let's talk about what's actually going to happen on the field today and tomorrow. Noah Eagle joining us. You call the regular season game between Ohio State and Oregon one of the best games of the college football season during the regular season. Oregon eked out a win at home, but Ohio State is favored in the game tomorrow. Not by much, but they are a slight favorite. How do you see this game shaking out round two between Ohio State and Oregon?
Yeah, Josh, I mean, Ohio State, just talent, if you just looked at paper of every team in the country, they're the best team. They're the most talented team. every facet of the game. Offense, defense, special teams, they have the best players. Most expensive roster, high NIL, most expensive coaching staff with a head coach who's won a lot of games, an offensive coordinator who's won a lot of games as a head coach, a defensive coordinator who's been a head coach and now in year three in that position has led one of the most formidable units in all of college football, a quarterback that's been thoroughly underrated this year and underappreciated for what he's done, two running backs that are going to be, I think, very good NFL players. You've got Jeremiah Smith, who's probably the best player in college football. I understand Travis Hunter, Heisman winner, I get all that. But Jeremiah Smith, if he was eligible today, would be the first overall pick. He's that good. Carnell Tate's an NFL receiver. Emeka Buka is an NFL receiver. The only concern is with the injuries up front on the offensive line, including one that happened in that Oregon game and an important one in that, you've got two starters who are not going to be there, two important starters. And I think that's where we've seen them falter this year. In their two losses, it's been the offensive line that just hasn't held up. And it hasn't given Will Howard enough time, hasn't given their running backs the proper lanes. And against an Oregon front, defensively, that has been absolutely menacing this year. One of the more underrated groups themselves in all of college football. That could be a challenge. You know, Oregon, we know what we're getting out of them. And I think that's the value. After the first couple of weeks of the season, those first 2 weeks, they kind of had to figure it out, limp themselves into shape. They've been awesome, really, the rest of the way. And the biggest difference in this game for me, despite Will Howard having an underratedly great season, the quarterback I trust most of all those that are remaining in the bracket is Dillon Gabriel. He's just so solid, veteran presence, always under control, calm spirit, gets everybody else on his wavelength. And the guys trust him implicitly. And I think that goes a really long way in games like this. In a fourth down and eight, fourth quarter, 6 minutes to go, down three, can you convert? And he's proven that he can.
We talked maybe about earlier, you know, potential changes to the format. Sticking with Oregon, it's such a tough draw when you're the best team in the country. You don't lose a game during the regular season. You go undefeated. And yet you have the toughest path to a national championship. Of all the ideas that are thrown out there about improving the college football playoff, seeding is probably the most glaring thing they need to address moving forward, no?
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to get fixed. If there's anything that they're going to change, it would be, hey, let's just take a step back here. Do we really need to give all these conference champions automatic buys? And the answer is probably no. Automatic bids is different than automatic buys. You know, you don't give the top four conference champions in NCAA basketball the number one seeds. That's just not how it works. It's the top four ranked team. So even if Purdue loses last year in the Big Ten championship, they don't get knocked down to a two automatically. They're still number one. And that's how it should be. So I think that's how it will be probably after this year. I think they'll learn their lesson that a team like Penn State doesn't necessarily deserve the quote-unquote least resistance, and it seemed like Oregon doesn't necessarily need quote-unquote the most resistance. At the same time, if you want to win a national championship, it's going to be difficult. It's just how it is. And so for Oregon, you look at what they're going to have to go through to go undefeated this year, to go 16-0, which is now an extra game above what we had seen, and win a national championship. It's going to be one of the more difficult paths over the course of a regular season into postseason, including Big Ten championship and everything in between, that I can remember. It feels similar to almost the Joe Burrow LSU team with some of the teams they faced through that season, and they conquered them all. And so if Oregon's as good as they've proven to be all year, they'll find a way to do it.
Last one before we shift gears to the NFL. Give me the dark horse of the eight that are left that have a legit shot at winning the national title.
Well, I don't know how many are dark horses. I guess like Arizona State and Boise State probably would be the most surprising. But I don't necessarily see either of them winning. I think that they both can compete, especially in this round. And Boise State proved that going on the road against Oregon. However, I think it's probably Notre Dame in terms of teams that you're like, they're not a top four seed. They're not necessarily, they weren't even going to be one of those types of teams if you didn't put the automatic bids. They're a team that everybody expects to lose at some point. The only issue I have with them is Riley Mills being out. You know, that's their best defensive player, and they've gotten so many injuries that they've somehow overcome. Big injuries on the defensive side of the football. I mean, they've got one of the best cornerbacks in the country out for the year. They've got two edge rushers that were outstanding players out for the year, and now their best defensive interior lineman out for the rest of the season, who was their highest impact player. Can they overcome all that? And can Riley Leonard make enough plays, similar to what I said with Dillon Gabriel? Fourth down and seven, late fourth quarter, can you go make a play? And if he can, they'll win a lot of games, and they can have an absolute chance to be the last team standing here. So I'd say that would be my quote-unquote dark horse.
All right, so Penn State, Boise State, 6-3. That's the first quarterfinal game. That's tonight. Then we got 3 tomorrow. Texas, Arizona State at 1, Ohio State, Oregon at 5, and then Notre Dame, Georgia at 8:45 to close out the day. To the NFL we go now. Before we get to the actual NFL questions, I know I keep prefacing a lot of these, but just stick with me here. On that Netflix broadcast, in your preparation, were there any show references that you wanted to make that you had ready that you weren't able to work in? And if you did, which was the one that you regretted most not working into the broadcast?
No, I didn't do it like I did the Nickelodeon stuff where I really wanted to hammer that stuff down. This was a complete, at least in my eyes, a completely different entity. It just aired on Netflix. So, I mean, that would have been, you know, as if when I do a game on NBC, I'm like, I got to get all these NBC shows. I never think that way. So I think, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way I looked at it.
Right.
I don't know. I just haven't gotten to that point. But yes, if The Office was still airing on NBC, maybe we'd have a different conversation.
I would imagine it was pretty jarring for a lot of casual football fans, a lot of casual fans in general, to watch game one and see your father and then see just a younger version of him pop up on the screen in game two. I would imagine that a lot of people were a little caught off guard by just that visual going from one game.
Maybe they just thought that Netflix has this weird fountain of youth power. I mean, they've got money, so they've got a way to do it, and they've got resources, so they might have like the Snapchat aging filter, but in real life.
You saw Lamar in that game, obviously. For a while, he was the MVP favorite. Then Josh Allen went through his stretch where he kind of took the odds on, became the odds on favorite for MVP. Now it's a lot more neck and neck. If you had an MVP vote, who's it going to, Lamar or Josh Allen?
Man, it's really, really tough because I do think it's one of those that you could go either way and it's not wrong. It's one of those, and I think that people have brought up this comparison and it kind of fits, I think, where one of them feels like Nikola Jokic, and I would say that's Lamar Jackson, where he's won it now twice. And you're like, are you really going to give this guy at this age 3 MVPs with as little playoff success as he's had? And, of course, Jokic had won a couple, but he hadn't really advanced. He'd gotten to the conference finals once in the bubble, but everyone says, oh, it's the bubble. So they're waiting for that success before they crown him the best player in the league type thing. Versus Joel Embiid, who continuously put up stats, led the league in scoring as a center for consecutive seasons, which was unheard of. And at some point you say, you got to give him his recognition. He keeps finishing second. He's right there. But similarly, team success wasn't quite there. And the questions always remain, is he going to deliver in the big moments? It feels eerily similar to that. And for that reason, my mind would tell me that Josh Allen's going to win because there is a voter fatigue factor and something's there. But if you ask me, who would I rather have big moment? Who would I rather watch consistently? I think it's Lamar. I think he's gotten so much better every year. And this year, it's his best season. There's no doubt in my mind that this is the best season he's put together for a guy who's already won two. And right. So I think that you can't go wrong with either one. I will still say, and I said this during the broadcast, if Cincinnati finds their way into the playoffs, you almost have to give it to Joe Burrow. I mean, he's leading the league in passing touchdowns. His stats are astronomical. They've been unbelievable. And I think they have 4 games this year, I believe. I'd have to double check. They have 4 games this year that they've lost where the offense has scored 35+. So from an impact perspective and value perspective, it's all there. The metrics would support it. And to drag a team from completely dead, I mean, completely dead into the playoffs, I think speaks volumes. So to me, all three of those guys are deserving this year. And you could throw Saquon in there with the season he's having, but all three of those quarterbacks are just, they're at a different level right now.
I kind of want the Burrow scenario to play out just for the chaos that would cause, because they're kind of talking about it like you just did there, but he's really not in this conversation. So I'm kind of rooting for that just for the chaos of the entire process. You also had the Chiefs earlier this year. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, he would take votes away from the other two guys for sure. It would be like a third party in a presidential election or something, where the third party takes enough votes away from one of the guys and then somebody else wins. I think that's what could happen.
It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. You had the Chiefs earlier this year. I've had them as well. They've flirted with so many close losses in these games this year that I thought eventually it would just catch up to them. And it just hasn't. They somehow keep doing this. They're getting healthy at the right time. They look scary again. Their defense is still good. Are they going to do this again this year? Are they going to win three in a row?
It's so hard to win three in a row. It really is. Here's the thing I will say about Kansas City, and I'm sure you feel the same just seeing them. The difference from them versus even the Vikings 2 years ago, who it seemed like every week was winning another one-score game. But Minnesota was always like they were battling from behind. You know, they were finding some way to miraculously pull off another comeback, or the game that I did, 33-0 down at halftime and found a way to win. The crazy 4th-and-18 catch by Justin Jefferson against the Bills. It just every week it was something else like that. The Chiefs, yeah, while they've had some crazy moments and the field goal block and the doink for the division and the toe by Isaiah Likely and all that stuff is great and true, the difference for me is they never feel like the game's out of their control. It's never out of their grasp. It always feels like they have it exactly where they want it. Versus it was for a lot of these other teams that kind of fly by the seat of their pants, they need the break. Kansas City knows they're going to get the break. And even the game that I did against Houston, it was a one-score win. It was an 8-point game, you know, and that was a little different. But when I watch them, they're so good at keeping an offense on the field when they have to. Patrick Mahomes' numbers in the fourth quarter are so much better than in the rest of the game. So when the moment calls for it, he's got two guys who are super reliable now on third down in a big conversion. Kelce still comes up to play. And DeAndre Hopkins has been amazing, both on third down and in the red zone. So you've got these two veterans, know exactly where to be, how to be. You've got your running backs back now. You know, the offensive line has had to be shifted around a little bit, which they've adjusted to on the fly. And Joe Tooney has had to play out of position, and that's been really interesting to watch. But it just feels like when the moment calls for it, they're so good. And their defense is so good and has been for the last 3 years now. And Steve Spagnuolo is so good as a defensive coordinator. So, yeah, like all the pieces are in place for them to go ahead and run the table again. It's just so difficult to do that. I mean, it hasn't been done for a reason. And so if anyone could, it would be Mahomes. It would be this team. I do think Baltimore's playing at a ridiculously high level, and their defense is so improved from the beginning of the season. Obviously, Buffalo is hungry, and I think that there are other teams in there. And then the NFC to me is fascinating, and any of those teams that get through are going to be a challenge. So I know we'll all be tuned in and we'll all be locked, but if any team's capable, it's this team.
Last one for you quickly, because we barely touched on the NBA, but I want to get your thoughts on a local story here as someone who's an outsider. This Jimmy Butler situation feels like it's coming to a head eventually, between Pat Riley's statement last week and all the Shams Charania reports, and then today Jimmy Butler is all coy with the media again, basically playing dumb, oh, I don't know what I want to do, that type of thing. From an outsider's perspective, what do you make really quickly of this Jimmy Butler situation with the Miami Heat?
Yeah, I really don't know yet, because Jimmy is such a free spirit in that sense. And he's also not he's not stupid. He knows exactly what he's doing. I mean, he's done this before. Obviously, he's forced his way out of Chicago, forced his way out of Minnesota. That was much more famous. Philadelphia, he was ready to return, and they just chose Tobias Harris and didn't pay him. They chose Simmons and Embiid. which now looks like a complete mistake in many respects. But he goes to Miami, and it actually has worked for much longer than I think a lot of people probably anticipated, just given his track record. Here's the thing with Jimmy Butler. You put him in a different situation, and we've seen it. He can instantly add to a team. I mean, Minnesota was nothing. He goes there, they make the playoffs for the first time in forever. He goes from there to Philadelphia. They were really good. He made them better, and it was a Kawhi Leonard miracle shot away from them going to the conference finals, potentially beating Milwaukee, and then potentially beating a hobbled Golden State team. They might have won that year. Who knows? He goes to Miami. He's made two finals runs. He elevates. That's what he does, especially when he first arrives. So if I'm a team, if I am Golden State, and I say, okay, we've got assets. We can give up a Jonathan Kuminga now. We can give up a Moses Moody, whoever else, and get a Jimmy Butler in here, get another star-level player to try to just give one final push with Steph Curry. I'm saying, yeah, I'm doing that. I'm doing it. We don't want to waste whatever we have left of Steph. We want to maximize his window. Do it. If you're the Sacramento Kings and you've completely fallen off the rails and fired your head coach, what's one thing that can change? You can bring in a stud like that. I know the Phoenix Suns were a team that has been interested. I'm sure a team like the Lakers, like all these teams, they would love to have them. And so I do think that teams they're going to be willing, if they feel like they're one piece away, to give up legit assets to get them. And if you're Miami, I personally just believe you have to capitalize on that while it's still at a level that you can capitalize. And so if you're Pat Riley, you've got to take a good, hard look at your own situation and say, hey, we still have a lot of talent. We still have Bam Adebayo and Tyler Hero when he's not fighting people, and Terry Rozier, and young players that have developed, Jaime Jaquez, and Khalil Ware looks like he's going to be solid. You've got all this talent. Can you now jumpstart instead of a rebuild, a retool? And eventually, you're going to attract somebody else. You give yourself some more cap space, you can attract another star. So that's the way I view it. And I think that's probably how it plays out. But we know Jimmy's going to play games. And I think so far he's been pretty tame with Miami, considering his track record.
Noah Eagle, thanks so much for taking the time. You gave us a lot of it. And thank you for agreeing with me and not with Hawk when we started this interview regarding my travel exploits this past weekend. I'm interpreting your answers earlier as you agreeing with me, like I said. So thank you for that. And thank you for the time. Really appreciate you, brother.
Whatever helps you sleep at night. Happy New Year, Josh.
Same to you, Noah. That's Noah Eagle, voice of Big Ten Saturday night on NBC, voice of Big Ten basketball on Peacock, and of the Nets on YES. Back with more Hawk and Crowder after this.
This is the Hawk and Crowder Show.
You smell that? You feel it?
What's that?
Hialeah.
Hawk and Crowder.